Be careful here because the next motion will be a twitch unless you are careful, and if you do twitch violently your astral body will come back with a thud into the physical. Most people, in fact we might almost say everyone, has had the experience of apparently falling just at the point of sleep. Learned pundits have stated that this is a relic of the days when humans were monkeys. Actually, this sensation of falling is caused by a twitch which causes the newly floating astral body to fall back into the physical body. Often it will jerk one into complete awakeness. But whatever it is, there is usually a violent twitch or jerk and back comes the astral body without having got more than a few inches out of the physical. If you are aware that there is a possibility of a twitch, then you will not twitch, so let yourself become aware of difficulties, then you can, 66, overcome them. After the slight tingling stops, make no movement at all, and there will be a sudden coolness, a feeling as if something has left you. You may have an impression that there is something just above you, as if, to put it crudely, someone was dropping a pillow on you. Do not be disturbed. And if you are not disturbed, the next thing that you will know is that you are looking at yourself from perhaps the end of the bed or even from the ceiling looking down. Examine yourself with as much composure as you can manage on this first occasion, because you never see yourself so plainly as you do on this first excursion. You will look at yourself, and no doubt you will exclaim with astonishment when you find that you are nothing like you expected. We know that you look in mirrors, but a person does not see a true reflection in even the best mirror. Lefts and rights are reversed, for example, and there are other distortions. There is nothing like coming face to face with yourself. Having examined yourself, then you should practice moving about the room, look in a closet or in a chest of drawers, observe how easily you can go anywhere. Examine the ceiling, examine those places where you cannot normally reach. No doubt you will find much dust in the inaccessible places, and that will give you another useful experiment. Try to leave fingerprints in the dust, and you find you cannot. Your fingers and your hand and your arm as well sink through the wall without any sensation whatever. When you are satisfied that you can move about at will, look between your astral and your physical. Do you see how your silver cord is sparkling? If you have ever visited an old blacksmith's shop, you will be reminded of the way in which the red-hot metal sparkled when it was hit by the blacksmith's hammer, but in this case, instead of sparkling cherry red, the sparklings will be blue or even yellow. Move away from your physical body and you find that the silver cord stretches without any effort, without any diminution of diameter. Look again at your physical body, and then go to where you had planned, think of the person or of the place, and make no effort whatsoever, just think of the person and the place. Up you will rise through the ceiling, you will see your home and your street beneath. Then, if it is your first conscious trip, you will proceed, 67, fairly slowly to your destination. You will be going slowly enough to recognize the terrain beneath you. When you are used to astral traveling consciously, you will go with the speed of thought. And when you can do that, there is no limit whatsoever to where you go. When you are practiced in astral traveling, you can go anywhere at all, not merely anywhere on this earth. The astral body does not breathe air, and so you can go into space, you can go to other worlds, many people do. Unfortunately, through present-day conditions, they do not remember where they go. You, with practice, can be different. If you find it difficult to concentrate upon the person whom you propose to visit, it is suggested that you have a photograph of that person, not a framed photograph, because if you have a framed photograph in bed, you may roll over and break the glass, thus causing cuts. Have an ordinary unframed photograph, and hold it in your hands. Before turning out the light, take a long look at the photograph, then extinguish the light and try to retain a visual impression of the person whose features are in that photograph. That may make it easier for you. Some people cannot do astral traveling if they are comfortable, if they are well fed or warm. Some people can only go astral traveling consciously when they are uncomfortable, when they are cold or hungry, and it is indeed a fact, though an astonishing one, that certain people deliberately eat something that disagrees with them so that they get indigestion. Then they can do astral traveling without any particular difficulty. We suppose the reason for that is that the astral body gets heartily sick of the discomfort of the physical body. In Tibet and India there are hermits who are walled up, who never see the light of day. These hermits are fed perhaps once every 3 days, and fed just enough in order that life may be sustained, in order that the feebly flickering flame of life may be not extinguished. These men are able to do astral traveling all the time, and they travel in astral form to anywhere where there is anything to be learned. They travel so that they may converse with those who are telepathic, they travel that they may perhaps influence things for good. It is possible that in your own astral travels you will come across such men as these, and if you do you will indeed be blessed, for they will stop and give you advice and tell you, 68, how you may progress further. Read and reread this lesson. We repeat again that only practice and faith are necessary in order that you, too, may travel in the astral and be freed for a time from the troubles of this world. Lesson 12. It is so much easier to engage in astral traveling, clairvoyance and similar metaphysical pursuits if a suitable foundation is prepared first. Metaphysical training needs practice, considerable, constant practice. It is not possible to read a few printed instructions and then immediately without practice to go off on a far, far journey in the astral. You must practice constantly. No person would expect a garden to grow unless the seeds were planted in suitable ground. It would be most unusual for a beautiful rose to grow out of a granite rock. Wherefore it appears that you cannot expect clairvoyance, nor any occult art whatever, to bloom where the mind is closed and sealed, where the mind is a constant jangle of ill-connected thoughts. We are later going to deal more extensively with quietude because the present-day clutter of irrelevant thoughts and the constant blare of radio and television really is stifling our metaphysical talents. The sages of old exhorted, "Be still and know that I am within." The old sages devoted almost a lifetime to metaphysical research before committing a single word to paper. Again, they withdrew into the wilderness, into a place where there was no noise of so-called civilization, where they were free of distractions, where no one could drop a bucket or a bottle. You have the advantage that you can take much benefit from the lifetime experiences of the men of old, and you can take advantage of all this without having to spend most of your life in study. If you are serious, and if you were not serious you would not be reading this, you will want to prepare yourself, to make yourself ready for the speedy unfolding of the spirit, and the best way to do it is to relax first. Most people have no idea of what is meant by the word relax. They think if they slump in a chair that is good enough, but it is not. To relax, 69, you must let the whole of your body become pliant, you must make sure that all muscles are without tension. You cannot do better than to study a cat, see how the cat completely lets go. The cat will come in, turn round a few times, and then go down into a more or less shapeless heap. The cat does not bother at all about wondering if a few inches of leg is showing, or if one is looking ungraceful. A cat comes in to rest, to relax, and relaxation is thus the only thought in the cat's mind. A cat can flop down and be instantly asleep. Probably everyone knows that a cat can see things which humans cannot. That is because the cat's perceptions are higher up on our keyboard, and thus it can see into the astral at all times, and a journey in the astral for a cat is no more than it would be for us to cross the room. Let us, then, emulate a cat, because then we shall be on firm ground, and we can build our structure of metaphysical knowledge on a sound and enduring basis. Do you know how to relax? Could you without any further instructions become pliant, able to pick up impressions? This is how we would do it: lie down in any position which is comfortable. If you want to have your legs outspread, or your arms outspread, spread them out. The whole art of relaxing is to be completely and utterly comfortable. It will be much better if you relax in the privacy of your own room, because many people, particularly women, do not like anyone to see them in what they wrongly imagine is an ungraceful attitude, and to relax you have to forget all about conventional grace, and, indeed, all about conventions. Imagine that your body is an island peopled by very small persons who are always obedient to your commands. You can think, if you like, that your body is some vast industrial estate with highly trained, highly obedient technicians at the various controls and nerve centers which make up your body. Then when you want to relax, tell these people that the factory is being shut down. Tell them that your present desire is that they leave you, that they shut down their machines and their nerve centers, and go away for the time being. Lying comfortably, deliberately imagine a host of these small people in your toes, in your feet, in your knees, everywhere in fact. Picture yourself gazing down upon your body and upon all these little people who are pulling up on your muscles and causing your nerves to twitch. 70. Gaze down upon them as if you were some great figure high, high in the sky. Look upon these people, and then address them from your mind. Tell them to come out of your feet, leave your legs, command them to march away from your hands and from your arms, tell them to congregate in the space between your umbilicus and the end of your sternum. The sternum, let us remind you, is the end of the breastbone. If you run your fingers down the middle of your body, between your ribs, you will find that there is a bar of hard material, and that is actually the sternum. Run your fingers down a little further until the material ends. So, between that spot and your umbilicus is the designated spot. Command all these little people to congregate on that space. Imagine that you can see them marching up your limbs, up your body in their serried ranks like workers leaving a busy factory at the end of the day. In coming to the designated spot, they will have deserted your legs and your arms, and so these limbs will be without tension, without feeling even, for these little people are the ones who make your machinery work, the ones who feed the relay stations and the nerve centers. Your arms and legs, then, will be not precisely numb, but without any feeling of tenseness, without any feeling of tiredness. We might say that they will be almost not there. Now you have all your little people congregating in the prearranged space like a lot of factory workers attending a political rally. Gaze upon them in your imagination for a few moments, let your gaze encompass all of them, then firmly, confidently, tell them to get off, tell them to leave your body until you instruct them to return. Tell them to go along the silver cord and away from you. They must leave you in peace while you meditate, while you relax. Picture to yourself that silver cord stretching away from your physical body out into the great realms beyond. Picture to yourself that the silver cord is like a tunnel, like a subway, and imagine all the rush hour travelers in a city such as London or New York or Moscow. Imagine them all leaving the city at once and going out into the suburbs. Think of trainload after trainload taking all these workers away, leaving the city comparatively quiet. Make these little people do that to you. It is very easy with practice. Then you will be quite without tension, your nerves will no longer be a jangle, and your muscles will no longer, 71, be tense. Just lie quiet, let your mind tick over. It does not matter what you think about, it does not matter even if you do not think. Let that go on for a few moments while you breathe slowly, steadily. Then dismiss those thoughts in much the same way as you dismissed your factory workers. Humans are so busy with their petty little thoughts that they have no time for the greater things of the greater life. People are so busy wondering about when the next sale is held or how many trading coupons are given free this week or what is happening on the television, that they have no time for dealing with the things that really matter. All these mundane everyday things are completely trivial. Will it matter in 50 years' time that so-and-sos were selling dress lengths at below cost today? But it will matter to you in 50 years' time how you progress now, for keep this thought in mind, no man or woman has ever succeeded in taking a single penny beyond this life, yet every man and woman takes the knowledge which they have gained in this life to the next life. That is why people are here, and if you are going to take worthwhile knowledge to the other side, or just a useless clutter of unrelated thoughts, is a matter which should engage your earnest attention. So, this course is useful to you, it can affect your whole future. It is thought, reason, which keeps humans in their very inferior present position. Humans talk about their reason, and say it distinguishes them from the animals. It does. Indeed it does. What other creatures but humans throw atom bombs at each other? What other creatures publicly disembowel prisoners of war or deprive them of very useful appurtenances? Can you think of any creature except a human who mutilates men and women in such spectacular fashion? Humans, in spite of their vaunted superiority, were in many respects lower than the lowest beasts of the field. That is because humans have wrong values. Humans crave after money only, crave after the material things of this mundane life, whereas the things that matter after this life are the immaterial things which we are trying to teach you. Let your thoughts be switched off now that you are relaxing, make your mind receptive. If you will practice and practice again, you will find that you can switch off the endless empty thoughts which clutter you, 72, and you can instead perceive true realities. You can perceive the things of different planes of existence, but these things are so completely alien to life on Earth, so pleasantly alien, too, that there are no concrete terms with which to describe the abstract. Only practice is needed before you, too, can see the things of the future. There are certain great men who can drop off to sleep for a few moments and within minutes can again awaken refreshed, and with inspiration shining from their eyes. These are people who can switch off their thoughts at will, and tune in and pick up the knowledge of the spheres. This also you can do with practice. It is very, very harmful indeed for those who desire spiritual development to engage in the ordinary, useless, empty round of social life. Cocktail parties, one can hardly think of a worse pastime for those who are trying to develop. Drink, spirits and alcohol, impair one's psychic judgment. They may even drive one into the lower astral where one can be tormented by the entities who delight in catching humans in a stage where they cannot even think clearly. They find it most amusing. But parties, and the usual social round with the senseless chatter of empty minds trying to disguise the fact that their minds are empty, is a painful sight for those who are trying to progress. You can only progress if you keep clear of these shallow-minded people whose greatest thought is how many cocktails they can drink at any given gathering, or who prefer to chatter inanely about other persons' troubles. We believe in the communion of the souls. We believe that two people can remain together physically silent, no words need be said, yet these people commune telepathically by rapport. The thought of one evokes a response in the other. It has been noted that at times two very old people who have lived together for many years as man and wife can anticipate the thoughts of each other. These old people, truly in love, do not engage in senseless babble or small talk, they sit together picking up silently the message flowing from one brain to another. They have learned too late of the benefits which come to one from the silent communion. They have learned too late because old people are, literally, at the end of life's journey. You can do it while still young. It is possible for a small group of people, thinking constructively, to, 73, alter the whole course of the world's events. Unfortunately, it is too difficult to get a small group of people who are so unselfish, so unself-centered, that they can switch off their own selfish thoughts and concentrate only on the good of the world. We say now that if you and your friends will get together and will form a circle, each one of you sitting comfortably at full ease, and facing each other, you can do very great good for yourself and for other people. Each person should have his or her toes touching. Each person should have his or her hands clasped together. No person should touch another, of course, but each one should be as a separate physical unit. Remember the old Jews, the very old Jews, they well knew that if they were bargaining they should stand with their feet together and their hands clasped because then the vital forces of the body were conserved. An old Jew, trying to drive a hard bargain, always got the better of the bargain if he stood in that particular manner and his opponent did not. He did not stand that way through cringing subservience, as many people imagine, but because he knew how to conserve and utilize his body forces. When he had achieved his objective, then he could throw his hands wide and stand with legs apart. No longer need he conserve his forces for the attack, for he was the victor. Having attained his end, he could stand relaxed. If each of you in your group keep your feet and your hands together, each of you will conserve body energy. It is much the same as having a magnet and placing a keeper across the poles in order to save the magnetic force without which the magnet would be just a lump of idle metal. Your group should sit in a circle, all more or less gazing at space in the center of the circle, preferably at a space on the floor because then heads will be slightly tilted down, and that is more restful and more natural. Do not talk, just sit, be sure you do not talk. You have already decided on the theme of your thoughts, so no further talk is necessary. Sit like that for some minutes. Gradually each one of you will feel a great peace stealing in upon you. Each one of you will feel as if you are being flooded with an inner light. You will have truly spiritual enlightenment, and will feel that you are one with the universe. Church services are designed with that in mind. Remember that the early priests of all the churches were quite good psychologists. They, 74, knew how to formulate things in order to get desired results. It is known that one cannot keep a whole crowd of people quiet without constant direction, and so there is music and directed thought in the form of prayers. If a priest of any sort is standing where all eyes can focus upon him as he says certain things, then he has gained the attention of every person in the audience or congregation. Their thoughts are all directed to a certain purpose. This is an inferior way of doing it, but a way which is necessary for mass production among a people who will not devote the time or energy necessary for greater development on other lines. You and your friends can, if you wish, get far better results by sitting in your little group, and sitting in silence. Sit in silence, each one of you trying to relax, each one of you thinking of pure things or thinking of the designated item. Never mind about last week's grocery bills which you have not yet paid. Never mind about wondering what the next season's fashions are going to be. Think, instead, of raising your vibrations so that you may perceive the goodness, the greatness, which is in the life to come. We talk too much, all of us. We let our brains clatter away like machines which have no thought. If we relax, if we remain alone more and talk less when we are in the company of others, then thoughts of a greater purity than we can now imagine come flooding in upon us to uplift our souls. Some of the old country people who were alone all day had far greater purity of thoughts than any person in the cities of the world. Shepherds, while by no means educated people, had a degree of spiritual purity which many of the priests of high degree would envy. That is because they had time to be alone, time to ponder, and when they were tired of pondering their minds would go blank and the greater thoughts from beyond would enter. Why not practice for half an hour every day? Practice sitting or reclining, and remember you must be quite fully at ease. Let your mind become still. Remember, be still and know that I am God is one saying. Another is be still and know the I within. Practice in this manner. Let yourself remain free of thought. Let yourself remain free of worries and of doubts, and you will find that within a month you are more poised, you are uplifted, you are quite a different person. We cannot end this lesson without referring once again to parties and, 75, idle talk. In some finishing schools it is taught that one must have small talk in order to be a good host or hostess. The idea seems to be roughly that guests must never be left for one moment in silence in case their own personal thoughts are so murky that their outlook would become cluttered. We say, on the contrary, that in providing silence we should be providing one of the most precious things upon this earth, for in the modern world there is no longer silence, there is the constant roar of traffic, the constant shrieking of aircraft overhead, and over all the insensate blare of radio and television. This can lead to the fall of man once again. You, by providing an oasis of quiet and peace and tranquility, can do much for yourself and for your fellow men. Will you try for a day, and see how quiet you can be? See how little you can talk. Say only that which is necessary and avoid all that which is irrelevant, avoid all that which is merely senseless gossip and chatter. If you do this consciously and deliberately, you will be quite shocked at the day's end at how much you normally say which really does not matter in the least. We have been on a lot about chatter and noise, and if you will practice silence you will find that there, too, we are right. Many of the religious orders have orders of silence, many of the monks and nuns are commanded to keep silence, and the authorities do not do this as a punishment. They do it because they know that only in silence can one hear the voices of the great beyond. Lesson 13. Who has not, at some time or other, wondered what is the purpose of life on earth? Is it really necessary to have so much suffering, so much hardship? Actually, of course, it is necessary that there should be suffering and hardship and wars. We place too much store upon the things of this earth. We tend to think that there is nothing so important as life on earth. Actually, upon earth we are merely as actors upon a stage, changing our clothes to suit the role that we have to play, and at the end of each act retiring for a while, to return to the next act perhaps in different garb. Wars are necessary. Without wars the world would soon be, 76, overpopulated. Wars are necessary in order that there may be opportunities for self-sacrifice and for man to rise above the limits of the flesh in the service of others. We look upon life as it is lived on this world as the only thing that matters. Actually, it is the thing that matters least. When we are in the spirit, we are indestructible. We are immune from hardships and from illnesses. Thus, the spirit which has to gain experience, motivates a body of flesh and bone, a body which is but a lump of animated protoplasm, in order that lessons may be learned. Upon earth the body is as a puppet, jerking and twitching to the orders of the Overself who, through the silver cord, commands and receives messages. Let us look at things in a rather different way for a moment, shall we? A person who comes to earth for perhaps the first time is a helpless creature, something like a baby, and he is not able to make any plans for himself. Thus, plans have to be made for him by other people. We are not concerned with those who are unevolved, for if you are studying this course it shows that you have reached a stage of evolution in which you are able to plan more or less that which you have to learn. Let us look upon the scene before one comes to earth. A person, an entity, has returned to the Overself in the astral planes, has returned from one life on earth. The entity will have seen all the mistakes, all the faults of that life, and will have decided, perhaps alone, perhaps in company with others, that certain lessons were not learned and will have to be undertaken again. So plans are made whereby the entity will go down into a body once more. A search is made for parents who will afford the necessary facilities for the type of environment which is now required. That is, if a person has to be accustomed to handling money he will be born to rich parents, or if a person has to rise from the gutter he will be born to parents in very poor circumstances indeed. He may even have to be born crippled or blind, it all depends on what has to be learned. A human on earth is as a child in a classroom. Think of it in terms of classrooms. A child is in a classroom with a lot of other children. For some reason this particular child does not do so well, does not master the lessons, and so at the end of the term he makes a very poor showing at the examinations. The teachers decide that on the basis of, 77, his general attitude and grades during the term, and the general mess that he has made of the examination itself, he is not fit, not ready to be promoted to a higher grade. Thus, the child goes off on the school vacation at the end of term with the unhappy knowledge that when school starts again he is going to have to come back to the same old class. With the resumption of school activities, the child who was not promoted goes back to learn all the same lessons, to have another chance. But those who studied more assiduously go on and reach a higher grade, and perhaps are treated with more consideration by the teachers because these children are ones who have tried, who have mastered their lessons and who have progressed. The one who was left behind feels self-conscious with the new members of the class. He tends to lord it over them for the time being, to show that although he did not pass into a higher grade it was because he did not want to. If at the end of this term the boy does not show signs of progress, then it may be that the teachers will hold a conference, and they may even decide that the boy is of an inferior mentality and recommend that he be moved to a different type of school. If children at school are doing well and progressing satisfactorily through their studies, there will come a time when they have to decide what they are going to be in later life. Are they going to be doctors, lawyers, carpenters or bus drivers? Whatever it is, they will have to undergo the necessary studies. A doctor to be will need to study different things than would a bus driver to be, and in consultation with teachers the necessary studies are arranged. So it is in the spirit world, before a human is born several months before he is born, in fact, somewhere in the world of spirit there is a conference. The one who is going to enter into a human body discusses with advisors how certain lessons may be learned in much the same way as a student upon earth will discuss how he may study to obtain his desired qualifications. The spirit advisors are able to say that the student about to enter into the school of the Horde shall become a son or daughter of a certain married couple, or even of an unmarried couple.